Excuse me, it's the operator, and I just need to inform all participants that today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect your line at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's CCI call on Tuesday, the 21st of February. We have Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Carlos Aguirre, Jonathan Robertson, Steve Del Bianco, Rosemary Sinclair, who's just joined. Welcome, Rosemary. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Julie Headland, and myself, Pierce LeGruber. Apologies noted today from Tobias Mahler. And if I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Barry.
Thank you, Gisela. Rosemary, you just joined. We're just now getting kicked off, and I was just going to run through the action items real quick, and then we'll move over into the advice letter.
Terrific, Barry. Thank you.
Okay, great. All right, we have five action items. Four are mine. One is Steve's. The first one, which is still outstanding, which is to review the requirement for GTLD registries to post conditions of registration on their own site, in addition to registrars that would sell the second-level registration. I didn't get to this action item as quickly as I wanted to. I've still been perusing the applicant guidebook, and I haven't found any specific language to that just of yet, but I'm not giving up hope, so I'm going to keep this one open, and I hope by our March 6th meeting I'll have some more information. With respect to number two, provide a working group counts of TLDs, registry operators, registry service providers is what that's supposed to be, RSP, and registrars. Earlier in the week or late last week, I sent out a spreadsheet that contained pivot tables of the counts. The only area that was elusive was exactly determining who the registry service providers were behind the TLDs. The first part, it's really not conducive to bring up the spreadsheet on the Adobe Connect session, so I'm just reviewing off of my own Excel file. Basically, what I did was went out to the IANA database and copied their entire listing of all the top-level domains delegated into the root. And within each entry, it also contained a technical contact, which in some cases did provide information as to who the registry operator was on the back end, and in other cases it did not. One example would be .Asia. Their specific technical contact was just the .Asia organization and a contact name behind that. But I do know through some other activities that affiliates is actually providing the back-end infrastructure for that TLD. So at this point, I'm not really sure how to get a valid, accurate count as to the service provider behind that. So I'm not sure how the working group would like to post these numbers into the advice letter. But again, it belongs into the section of competition where we're looking at the overall counts of top-level domains, registry operators, registry service providers, and registrars. So with that said, there are 326 top-level domains delegated into the root. 11 of those are tests, and one of them is infrastructure. So if we remove the 13... that would be 313 top-level domains delegated. With respect to the count of registry operators, the number was basically rolled up. And I don't have the email that I sent in front of me. Of course not. It was basically 326 minus the multiple counts of those operators that run multiple domains. I don't have that number in front of me real quick.
Barry, on this particular one, on the competition table, this one was only on GTLD side, not including CCs when it comes to operators, though. So it might be that the number's a lot lower if it's just the G side, the GTLD side.
Okay. With that bit of information, I thought I provided that in the email that I sent. I really apologize that I don't have that up in front of me.
No, yeah, your email has five. I guess I'm just focusing on whether item C on the email from you under 1C was for GTLDs or for all TLDs.
Yes, item C, unique registry operators.
It's my recollection, looking at row 3 on page 11 of our table, that should only be the G's. Someone else can check me on that. If you look at row 3 in the table of competition on page 11. Thank you. I see you bringing it up on the screen.
Yes. Yes, that is only the G's. And I guess I didn't make that distinction in the email that I sent.
But this makes it even easier to get C.
If I were to filter out real quick. So we basically have Affilius, Neustar, Core, VeriSign, Mid-Counties Cooperative Domains Limited. And that is it. So, yes, five registry operators for the G's as of right now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. So we've got the five registry operators. Then for the total number of TLDs, we've got that number. We've got the quantity of GTLDs before, and we will have them after expansion. We've got the unique registry operators for the G's. And I think the reason why I was confused about this one is there was plenty of discussion based off of how we modified our definition and removed the market rivalry among all TLDs. It used to be GTLDs, and now it's all TLDs. But yet, on this specific metric, we're only counting the generics. And so that's why I included the entire number within my email. Then the next one, registry service providers, before and after. Like I said, this is very elusive, and I'm open to input as to how we might get that accurate number. Fortunately, it matches the moderately difficult to obtain. And then lastly, the quantity of registrars, which is 1,000. So I throw it back out to the working group how we want to list these numbers into the advice letter.
This is Steve. If I might, we could get dispose of this now, Rosemary, if you were on board, by just looking at what Barry has on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll keep a markup copy and put in the numbers for each of these rows.
Okay. That sounds good.
The first row was just the quantity of total TLDs. Our target was an increase of 2x over 2011. And Barry, I think you just told us that the number in parens under that 2011 would read 313.
Correct.
The next row was the quantity of GTLDs, not all TLDs, but just Gs, and I think it's paren 21 paren.
Correct. 4 generics, 3 generic restricted, and 14 sponsored.
Good. Unique GTLD registry operators. I think you just said it was 5.
I did, and just again to clarify, so I have Affilius, Neustar, Core, VeriSign, mm-hmm. Mid-Counties Cooperative Domains Limited, and that's all the uniques that I see in my list.
And the next row is registry service providers, and that is also 5. It's not the same 5. One of them is PIR, but...
Yeah, you know, wait a minute. Yeah, so this is Barry. My mistake. That makes 6. I didn't see PIR there.
Good. So PIR is in there, but they're not in the second list because they use affiliates. So it's 6 for the third row in the table, and it is 5 for the fourth row.
Very good. And then quantity of registrars based off of, which was pulled off of the ICANN.org accredited registrars list, shows a cool 1,000.
Thanks, Rosemary. That's it for me. So now I have values to put in the 3-year targets column for the first 5 rows.
Yes.
on page 11. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Barry. Wonderful work.
I think it's really good that we've done this. Cheryl?
Thanks, Cheryl, for the transcript record. Barry and Steve, I just wanted to make sure that even as a footnote, because particularly the community that I have the joy of interacting with most, there's a whole lot of pedants beyond me in the list. And if we just have the footnote that says about the test and you know, the difference between the total number and the 313 that we're quoting, it'll just save us actually having to say it in presentation. And the other mm-hmm. thing was, this week, in my capacity as a board member of a CCTLD regulator, we were given a presentation which looked at the registrars for CC, our own CC, but also those who had interest in the G space. I'm just wondering whether somewhere, perhaps not at this stage in the report, but, you know, as a side note, there may be something useful to tease out from the CCTLD registry community, because they probably have some data as well that could help us. That was it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl, did you recommend a footnote as well for the other items?
I wouldn't mind if there's, I mean, I don't want to hold up getting this out. You know, I think we can pick it up later or as a, you know, just in presentation or whatever. But I was quite astonished looking at the percentage market share information and the who wears what hats, just from my own perspective. And I suspect, you know, there's probably another 200 others that we could pick some information from as well.
Rosemary here. Cheryl, that raises an interesting point. I wonder, should we think about putting this information as an appendix in the document that we release for public comment? Are there other views on that?
One from me, Rosemary. I believe that Barry Cobb's email content mm-hmm. could be a big footnote that would be mm-hmm. referenced in all 5 of these rows.
Yep. Perfect.
And that footnote would appear only on this page rather than sort of an appendix.
Okay, fine. Yep.
Yep, happy with that.
Rosemary here, I had the same reaction, Cheryl. I was just really surprised and I thought, thank goodness we asked for this information because it makes the work real and robustly based on numbers that I don't think many people are aware of.
And okay. This is Barry. So I'll take the action item just to revalidate my bulleted list, and then I'll send that back over you to Steve, over to Steve to create the appendix for that.
Thanks, Barry.
And so, if I may, this just still kind of raises one question about the quantity of unique GTLD registry operators before and after expansion. If we're looking at the universe with respect to competition and TLDs,
mm-hmm.
Why would we omit CCTLDs registry operators of CCPLDs in this number, or at least call it out separately. I'm not saying that it's...
I have an answer for that. It's because of the target. If the target is something like a 2X, it makes sense to think about the five that are in there. If you added in 290 more, we would be doing a bunch of mathematical gymnastics to figure out what a reasonable target would be. You know, a 1% increase.
Okay, understand. But aren't some CCPLD registry providers possibly providing services for new Gs?
Oh, undoubtedly.
Okay, you said operators, and then you just put in service providers. Which of the two are we talking about, operators or service providers?
Service providers.
Okay, so if we talk about service providers, that's the fourth row. By focusing on the G, we get a relatively modest 2X multiple. We include all the service providers who help to run the CC space. There's 290. And I have no idea how many service providers are running those 290 CCTLDs. It's not part of your draft note either.
Rosemary, haven't we covered both bases the way we've got it structured? We've got everybody, and we're looking for a two times increase on that, and then we're looking at unique registry service providers, and then we have a two times increase on that. If we were to put them all together, we'd be going for a 0.1% increase. So I think we've covered both of them, and it's good that we've done it that way for the point that Steve's just made. And I guess if the community feels strongly another way, they'll let us know in public comment. Thank you.
Yeah, but let's be clear, that fourth row, Barry's right. On that fourth row, we didn't say the word G for the service provider. We did for the operator, but we didn't say it for the service provider. And it was my impression that we were focusing on G, just like we did in the row above.
So, yes, Rosemary, that was my impression too. In fact, I'm making it up as I go along by reading in GTLDs into that line. Okay.
So, Barry, let me just ask you, what would happen to the numbers if, in fact, you went out and figured out somehow how many registry service providers were running the back ends for the 293 CCTLD operators? And if you got a number like 250, we would add 255 present. I don't think as a group we had said we wanted to see what kind of an increase in that number.
This is Barry. I agree that it would definitely influence not only the actual number, but certainly it'd be several decimal places versus a 10 or 15% increase per se.
And I believe that we are likely to see a roughly 10, if not more, operators of new GTLDs, but it won't be 100 because the registry service provider back ends, there is quite a bit of consolidation if you look at the way the registrations have gone so far for the new window. Minds and Machines puts in for 50, Oz Registry puts in for a lot of them, and it's because the applicants got the message that ICANN wants to see experienced and financially strong registry service providers for the new G space.
Correct.
There's a lot of factors leading to a consolidation, and I feel like if we were to get to 10, 2X of 5, if we were to get to 10, we're doubling the number of competitors in that space, and that contributes to competition. But if we set a goal much higher than that, we're going to run into the other policy objective of having experienced and capable providers.
And that would affect confidence if the consumers ever actually knew about it.
I think you're right. I'd argue we stick with G and make it 2x times the current 5. If we did it that way, do you think that we still list moderately difficult to obtain, or does that go away? Barry?
I believe we'll be able to obtain it, and the reason why I say this is, and I think I included it in the email, is Domain Insight. He's tracking a list of who all the service providers are, the current and the new ones that are popping up. One way or another, we'll be able to get to that number. Where it was moderately difficult is understanding who the provider was for the current CC.
That's what I thought you'd say. I agree with you. So we could take out moderately if this group has a consensus to focus this on Gs only.
I'm happy with that on the basis of Barry's input. It's Rosemary here. Cheryl?
Yep.
Oh, so
yep,
Cheryl's
green.
A tick.
Yep. Green.
Yep. Good.
Okay, great. Shall we move on to the next action item?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Good. Great. Number three is for me to prepare for public comment. I've completed the forms, just awaiting for the blessing from the working group that we're ready to go to print. And as soon as we do, I'll create the PDF and send the forms over to the right team in ICANN, and we'll get that posted hopefully tomorrow if everything completes today. Action item number four, I prepared the first draft for the Costa Rica presentation. I sent that out to the list, and we'll discuss that as our fourth agenda item. And then lastly, Steve submitted version 6 of the draft advice letter. So with that, I'll turn that over to you. Oh, Cheryl?
I actually wanted to – I was waiting until you finished, Barry, but I was going to take you back to the prepare for public comment. Did I hear the words translation in that statement?
Did not.
You did.
No, I didn't think I did, and it would be remiss of me not to ask a question.
I'll answer the question with a question. I take it the working group feels that the advice letter does need to be translated.
Rosemary here. Barry, I really think this one particularly does, because we're talking about consumer trust and consumer choice.
Too huge not to, Barry.
We need to use all the tools we can to reach out to people in this public comment, particularly those people that we're trying to focus on.
And Barry, Cheryl here. Rosemary, I'm sorry, I have lost the ability to mute my phone, so my beasts in the background, I literally, other than going and strangling them, can't do a damn thing about it. The other thing is, if we get it in real fast, Barry, I happen to know that the agendas don't need to go in for translation until sometime on Wednesday your time. So that would mean if we were to slip this in earlier, we'd be ahead of the pack.
Cheryl, this is Barry. I'm not sure what you mean by the agendas.
All of the whole of the ICANN meeting agendas have to be in by Wednesday lunchtime for translation. Now, that's going to be a lump of work going through the translation and language services team. Therefore, if we were to get our advice letter in advance of that...
All right. Okay, I understand.
Yep.
I will have to go back to other co-workers from ICANN to understand the translations process, but I'll take that action item to get it done.
Christine,
this is Julie. Just a question. How many languages did you want, the 6 UN languages?
It needs to be the 6 UN, but the bare minimum for off the top is the Spanish and French.
Right. Yeah, typically when we've done translations for public items in the public comment, then we... we give the same amount of time, to the translated item. So, for instance, if we, so there's two questions here. First of all, do we hold up putting the whole public comment, putting it up in the public forum for comment when the translations are done? Alternatively, and what we've done in some other instances where we've had this is we put the English up then you put the other languages up for the same period of time, but you you know, you extend the English so that basically they all close at the same time, and then, you know, so that they're all ending at the same time, and then you start the reply after that. There's, you know, there's no hard and fast rule that says, as far as I know, that you have to do it a certain way, and I'm just asking if the work group has any thoughts there.
Julie, Cheryl here. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and more importantly, providing we don't go under the minimum 21 days on the first cycle of the public comment and then reply comments system that we're now running for the UN languages, we're home and hosed anyway. And I would think that the ACs and SOs who do actually work in English would do nothing but appreciate the additional time in their agendas to get the work done and respond if they need to.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Cheryl. That was extremely helpful. I think we could then go ahead and get the English up right away, put in the request right away for the translations, with the emphasis that you know, certainly want, you know, Spanish and French as quickly as possible, especially Spanish, obviously leading up into Costa Rica. We had asked for 40 days for 40 days for the initial period, so, well, you know, quite over the 21 minimum, you know, and then with a 21-day reply.
Yeah, as long as all the UN languages come in advance, you know, in excess of that, we'll be home and hosed. And can
right.
I just say, it will be a delight from the at-large advisory committee's perspective to actually see a recent public comment first cycle go out with more than the minimum. There seems to be a default assumption that 21 is it, as opposed to 21 is the minimum.
Right. Now, we did want to have a longer period of time, and part of that is because we want it to extend past Costa Rica, and that is also, I think, a general rule of thumb that we try not to have public comments. You know, if we have a public comment leading up to an ICANN meeting, that we extend the time, you know, because people are very busy during that meeting.
And in something as important as this, Julie, I think you'd be very quick to getting Olivier to write rather rude letters to people.
I don't know what you mean there, Cheryl. No idea. So anyway, all right, we'll take the actions and proceed accordingly.
Rosemary here, just with a general interest question, how long will it take, ballpark-wise, to get the first couple of translations done?
I would not be able to say, because it depends on what they've got in the pipeline. Cheryl is right, if we can get our items in before they're starting to translate the various agenda items, I think that will help. You know, I'll try to see if we can get an ETA on a couple of them and let you know. It is a it depends on the length of the document and the amount of technical information and so on. So,
yes, and I'm just thinking, Rosemary here, I'm just thinking in this particular circumstance we're running into a increased workload, I would imagine, in translation group because of the upcoming conference.
Yes, obviously an increase prior to the conference and then, of course, afterwards as well. But at any rate, it's something that needs to be done, and, you know, we'll get it in the queue and we'll have a better idea at that point, I think.
Just one other thing just on that. The advantage we have now is Christina's been able to gather together quite a good and experienced team who know their ICANNese and really are pushing out even relatively technical documents in higher levels of accuracy in fairly short times. And this is not what I would call a technical document, so I'm relatively comfortable that if we get ahead of the work wave, we should be pretty darn good.
Right, right. You can be glad it's not something from the ESSAC. Then all that.
You got that right.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll try to get a sense of how long this will take, but we'll go ahead and get the request going.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you.
So, Rosemary here, I think we're now going back to the advice letter. Barry's got that up on the screen. Perhaps, Barry, if we just scroll through it slowly, if anyone has a point that they would like to call out, that they should feel free to do so.
And Rosemary, this is Barry. So the version that we're looking at was based off of a couple of comments that I had sent back to the list. And so I, on this version, I made sure to include where those comments were. So starting on page two, the first question I had was the substance of the working group and just wanting to omit the word joint. Is this really classified as a joint working group, or as I understood it, was only sanctioned as a GNSO function?
Steve, if I can answer that too.
I don't think we want to go down that track again unless Jonathan Robinson.
Rabbit hole. Avoid the rabbit hole. Take the word joint out by all means.
We've had a working group that's worked very successfully jointly, but I don't think we need to go there.
Okay, great. Thank you. The next change in
May I comment on that?
Sorry, Steve. Yes, go
Thank
ahead.
You. I'm okay dropping the word joint, but again, this is a not an aspirational paragraph. It was a descriptive paragraph, and a number you remember in Singapore that, descriptively at least, we tried to make it a joint working group by inviting participation, and we continue to keep it wide open. So I know joint is a loaded term, so we should drop it, but I hope the sentence and paragraph still convey that we invited wide participation, that we all began to work together to organize this. So I hope it still reads as if it should have been and could have been a joint. Yes. You just want to take the word out to avoid
the hysteria from the CNSO. Exactly.
Yes. It's Rosemary here. I think it does, Steve, because we indicated we reached out to everybody. The paragraph says that. Olivier?
Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. Totally agree with taking joint out just to avoid a headache. Because it lists the GNSO, CCNSO, and ALAC in the same sentence, I think it's pretty clear that we work together.
Yeah, if I may, the only other thing that might be useful, and it fits within at least previous pro forma behaviour in the wonderful world of GNSO, is there's no reason why we can't have an appendix of the members of the work group. That in itself, with the rank and file description of who those members are, might also help to reinforce it, Steve.
Great,
thank
you.
Cheryl, Rosemary here. In fact, I'm not. I think it is somewhere, but we'll make sure as we go through this letter.
Yes, it's at the last appendix.
Ah, see, there you go. Well done.
Great.
And which brings up this comment, so we don't have to do it. I removed Jonathan Zook's duplication.
Yes. Yep. Right. Okay. So.
Yeah, the next change was this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Rosemary, you had responded back to the list about this change as well.
Yes, Barry. It was in the context of some earlier episodes where people felt that things had been transmitted directly to the board in that particular case ahead of the community having a chance to really discuss and think and make input. So I guess I was just being very, very careful here to make sure that there's no suggestion that the working group is recommending that ICANN staff get on with things ahead of a degree of comfort through the community. So I think we're okay now, but I would like to just call that out for other people to just consider it for a moment.
Steve, if I could.
Me dropped?
No, you're not. You're still there.
Oh, okay. Getting very yeah, and the dogs as well.
That's funny to ask it that way. Is it me who dropped?
Well, if no one answers you, you know, yeah, it is. If you didn't answer me quickly, you probably would have heard cussing under my breath, which is good for the transcript record.
So,
Rosemary, can I ask how this sentence, I have no problem with the sentence, I just want to know how this sentence avoids the slippery slope of it appearing that the work group is making recommendations directly to the board as opposed to putting forward consideration issues for the ACs and the SOs to advise the board.
I'd like to respond if I could.
Well, that's what we need to be careful of, Cheryl, so perhaps we just need to have another look at this paragraph. Rosemary here, I just don't want all our good work to wind up in an endless discussion at Costa Rica about process.
Okay. How about something along the following lines, and this is, you know, on the fly, so for heaven's sake, put good English in here somewhere. In addition, the working group trusts that the AC and SO advice will anticipate that ICANN board may, blah, blah, blah.
I think that's a great suggestion.
But this is Steve. I want you to keep in mind that almost every paragraph in this document is written as if this is an advice letter to the board. There is qualifying language that says this advice letter would, of course, be handed not to the board, but rather to the ACSOs, who may embrace all, part, or none of it. We've said that qualifier. But it is written from the point of view of a working group to the board. So if we begin to
wordsmith
this paragraph, you can't stop there. We'd have to wordsmith practically everything. And it might be better for us to simply make it seem as if, put it back into advisory terms, not imperative terms. Just recommending that the staff begin collecting as soon as possible does feel like it jumps the gun a bit in front of the AC and SO approval. And I know that soon as possible really means after the ACs and SOs have given their advice to the board, but it really means after the board has evaluated all applicable advice and made a decision on definitions, measures, and targets.
Rosemary here. Perhaps that's the way to deal with it. Or another approach is to, as soon as possible, after appropriate decisions have been made, or something like that.
After the board has considered and acted upon this advice.
Yes. That does it. The difference that I saw in this paragraph was that we were wanting people to get on with stuff now, whereas everything else is subject to that qualifier about SOs and ACs considering this and sending off whatever their advice is. So if we could make that change, Barry, is it possible to do it on screen so we can have a look at it?
Probably not, because it's a PDF.
Oh,
yeah, correct. Fine.
Yeah.
Steve, I think you're driving updates, correct?
That's right, Barry. So what I wrote down was the first sentence is the same. We anticipate the board may want to have definitions, measures, and targets early enough to become part of their management objectives. That's the same.
Yeah.
And then, in addition, it would say, in addition, the working group recommends that ICANN staff begin collecting the proposed metrics and publishing baseline data as soon as possible after the board, I guess you could take out as soon as possible, but you could say after the board has acted on advice from ACs and SOs.
Rosemary here, that's a great construction, but I would leave in as soon as possible, Steve.
Oh, I see.
Our point is to try and get baseline stuff happening quickly. So.
Everyone else okay with the end of it then?
Rosemary here, I think we can take that as a yes and just keep going. Barry?
Great.
The only other thing on that is because things are so busy when these documents come out pre-meeting, it might be highly appropriate, Rosemary, for you as chair of this working group to have a quiet chat in a corridor to, shall I suggest, perhaps a current ICANN board member who used to be on a board of your own recently, who may have vested interest in this, to make sure that sentence is picked out and looked at?
Okay. I will undertake to do that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Barry. The next paragraph just suggested a little bit more specificity in terms of the potential cost behind the collection of the data. The previous had just read third-party assistant with surveys. By looks of the list, there could be other areas where ICANN may need to outsource some of those data needs, and thus I threw in the word expenses there as well. Okay, moving on to page 3. I don't believe we had
any... Hang on one second, right there, if you could please, right there. We say on the paragraph on the bottom of the screen, Barry, the initial draft is being posted for public comment on 21 February. I mean, I do realize that that could slip a day or two, and I hate to have to revise the draft. Is it customary to indicate the posting date in the body of a document?
Julie, would it be okay if we just said February 2012?
I think that would be just fine. I don't think we have to give a specific date.
I mean, if we needed a date, Julie, I could say this initial draft was prepared by the working group on 21 February and provided to staff for public comment posting.
That would be fine, too.
At this point, do we really know what date it would be posted?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, our goal is try to get it out, get it posted tomorrow, actually, if it's finalized today. But I don't know of any reason that a specific date has to be included in the document unless you all want it there.
Okay. That if it's okay, Barry, I would just change this, indicate that the working group, you know, concluded this initial draft on 21 February 2012.
Works for me. Thank you.
Got it. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay. I think so. Minus that change on page 3, I think all of our definitions had remained the same from our previous draft. Anybody care to chime in on any other changes about those? Okay. Very good. Page 5 is just the footnotes to the definitions. Page 6. The first one here was just wanted to clarify that, you know, the ICANN staff, you know, we haven't conducted a formal assessment. You know, the assessment that was provided was really just a line in the sand for the working group to get started. So I really just wanted to clarify that and if that's okay with the working group as well.
Well, Rosemary here, Barry, I think we should just put indicating an assessment of difficulty and then we don't have to worry about
Could we say indicating Barry Cobb's assessment of difficulty? No, just kidding. It's fun.
Only if we really want to take care of his career, Steve.
Good and done. Okay, and then the last change, I think, here is I just modified it so that the ICANN board directs staff to identify baseline values, meaning that in the future, based off of the advice and forward momentum from there, that you know, the baselines would be created, and just wanted to remove the fact that it didn't sound like it had already been performed.
Sorry, Barry, could you read the paragraph? It's Rosemary here. I'm just not sure about this now.
I guess it should be the working group suggests that.
Okay.
Or recommends that.
Yes, suggest.
And in fact, that, Rosemary here, sorry, that relates to the matter we were just talking about before, getting that baseline data.
Great. Okay. I think that was it for any of the suggested changes. How do we want to move forward with review of the metrics?
I think Barry, if you just scroll slowly, and anything that people want to comment on, they should do that. I'm pleased to see that definition of consumer keeps appearing because I think that's going to be helpful for people reading the document.
Barry, if you could hold there for a second. Rosemary, if you could leave the first one up there.
Okay.
I think it's right. I wonder if we could word it more artfully under the three-year target column.
Mm-hmm.
The very first one, we say the words, any adverse decisions. And I think what we mean by that is that any adverse decisions for registries who violated their own restrictions, you know, at the end of a dispute resolution procedure, would be undermining consumer trust. But is it sufficient to say the words any adverse decisions as a target? Not really. We would probably want to say the word no adverse decisions as opposed to any. Because the target is to have none.
And in fact, Rosemary, he more positively put the target is to have no adverse decisions because the registry operators are actually, sticking by their own word. So I think if we go with no adverse decisions, it's better than any adverse decisions.
Everyone okay with no instead of any, to be really clear?
Yep.
Fabulous. The words legacy TLDs, GTLDs, are mentioned many times. Does anyone feel as if we should define that in the little definitions on bottom of page 6?
Yes, I do. And that'll help with any interpretation once people start reading translated documents.
Rosemary, here. So we would define that as the number and existing companies. So we would be looking at the performance of that group of GTLDs, and then using that as the baseline, I guess, to compare the performance of the new GTLDs. So I think specifying that at this stage would be helpful.
This is Steve, and it isn't always the number. Sometimes it's an incident and so on. So perhaps I'll put in the definitions the word legacy GTLDs in quotes. I would say this refers to GTLDs that were in operation before expansion, comma, and then we ought to give a date. And the reason I say that is to resolve ambiguity of whether ICM would be considered as a GTLD. And Barry, it probably ought to be if we count 2012, right? Because by the end of 2011, ICM was up in XXX. I think that expands our numbers that we discussed earlier on the call, too.
Well, it's Steve, it's Jonathan speaking, and Rosemary. I mean, I think this is an important point because you could argue that, you know, the 2001 and 2004 rounds that were experiments or early stages of the new GTLD program. So I think it's pretty important to clarify that we mean GTLDs introduced on or after, you know, 1st of January 2012 or some specific date that defines very clearly that it's this significant new expansion of GTLDs as opposed to ones that succeed the original sort of ComNet and org.
And Jonathan, just to clarify, you came in just at the end of that. We were defining the term legacy GTLDs, which is quite the inverse of what you just said. But in the definition of legacy GTLDs, would refer to GTLDs that were in operation before the present expansion, and or I could say the 2012 expansion.
Correct, and that's what I was trying to is not as eloquently as I should have, but trying to capture that. I agree with that, and B, that the date is important because one might argue that InfoBiz, Travel, and others are not legacy GTLDs, but part of the new GTLD program. So it's very important to clarify that exactly.
You would agree that for our purposes, those are legacies?
Correct.
And the other question is ICM and XXX considered legacy as well?
It's got to be. It's got to be in the same class as those others because it's born of the other programs rather than it is very explicitly and specifically not part of this new GTLD.
What was the date on which ICM's XXX was made available for public registration?
Sunrise was September, and general availability was
December 6th.
December, yeah.
Good. So having the words 2012 mm-hmm. is the key. So we would be saying before 2012 when we refer to legacies.
Yes.
And at the words after 2011 mm-hmm. would refer to the expansion. That's great. I'll make that change to the definitions on the bottom of page 6.
Thanks, Steve. Barry, we can keep going, I think, now. Slowly, slowly. Mm-hmm.
Cheryl here.
It's Cheryl. Sorry. It's Cheryl.
Probably just a silly question, and I'll be very pleased to hear that it's not an issue. I just wondered how well the use of the hash symbol, which is all very great for us English speakers and Latin speakers to use, is going to work in translated documents, or should we shift from the use of a hash symbol to the actual enumerator or word number?
I'm happy, Rosemary here, I'm happy if we just go with the word.
For example, hash to a whole group of people means fracture, not number.
Now, this is Julie. I would recommend using the word number. I know it.
We use the word quantity in most of the definitions.
Yeah, quantity is
probably
fine.
Quantity.
Yeah, I just got nervous when I see the hash symbol.
Yeah, I mean, because when you say 3-year target, for instance, increase in a hash symbol of ID in a non-English TLDs, it would be clear to say number, particularly for translators.
Okay, I'll make that change. I guess that will be in many places.
That's a global, yeah.
Okay. And it's customary to have hyperlinks embedded in a PDF.
Yeah.
They don't have to be footnotes with the URL spelled out, do they, Julie?
Rosemary here. Barry, is it possible to just see if Julie can advise us on that?
Yes, I'll take that action.
If it is necessary, then we'll spell the URL out in a footnote yeah. underneath things, rather than jam an entire URL into these little boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Question on this one. At the top, we all agreed to put a qualifier up top that in the note, registrations using privacy, I should say, or proxy services, and or, will not provide meaningful data. Should I indicate will not provide meaningful data and will therefore not be counted?
Rosemary here. I think it's good to be clear. Yep.
And is it right to say and or? Because sometimes you can have both privacy and proxy. Is that correct?
I think, Rosemary here, I think it is right to say and or.
Okay, so it would say registrations using privacy and or proxy services would not provide meaningful data and mm-hmm. will therefore not be counted. For the purposes of the three rows here, by the way.
So perhaps we put in this section?
Really? Actually, now that I look at it,
mm-hmm.
only the first two rows.
Perhaps it's some sort of footnote, Steve, or asterisk for those two rows.
Everybody, work with me on this a second. We would have to throw it out for the purposes of our defensive registrations.
Yeah.
Wouldn't apply to the surveys, but what about the increased geographic diversity of registrants? I'll never know anything about a registrant's country of origin if they're hiding behind a proxy or privacy.
Rosemary here, so you can't usefully measure it. It doesn't help you. And I think that's just the way it is.
So I'm wondering about how we communicate to the community the times that we're going to disregard privacy and or proxies. But suppose it's the first, second, and fourth row on this page. That argue for moving it to a footnote instead of a note at the top, or both. What's everyone's thoughts about how to be clear?
Rosemary here, Steve. I actually like having the reference at the top, and perhaps the footnote explains which of the measures this will be relevant to. So, rows 1, 2, and 4 here. But I like the clarity of calling it out at the top of the box. Okay, so I'm not seeing any hands.
I'll make the note, and then on each of those three rows, I'll put in parens on each one, privacy and or privacy slash proxy not counted.
Yeah, okay.
All right. And that would be on the first, the second, and the fourth.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cheryl's supporting this in the chat. Okay. Thank you.
Hi, it's Jonathan. I've got a brief comment or question here. The use of the word service providers, registry service providers, I forget where that came from and I possibly missed it, but isn't it more common to call them back-end operators to distinguish from registry operators?
Mm-hmm.
Although I understand what service providers is, I attempt to stick to a more standard term if there is one, and it seems that the distinction that's made is one either is operating a registry from soup to nuts, as it were, or as providing the technical services, in which case the convention, as far as I know, is to refer to those providers as registry back-end operators rather than service providers.
Check that real quick in the guidebook. What does the guidebook refer to them as?
Well, I certainly know that there's the concept of the emergency back-end registry operator.
But we don't mean that.
No, I know. I realize that. I'm not sure whether the guidebook. Yeah, and that's a fair and good point, Steve. If the guidebook does refer to them as service providers, then let's stick with that definition, but just a note to perhaps check that then.
This is Barry. Jonathan, you bring up a good point, and way back on version one of our spreadsheet matrix, originally we had these measures of competition, and I'll just read them out. It was quantity of registry operators before and after 2012, basically. Quantity of back-end registry operators before and after 2012. And so I recall the working group having discussion about whether that was confusion or not with using registry operators with the qualification of back-end or not, and that's when we made the change to the service providers.
Rosemary here, but Jonathan raises a very good point. If we're using a term that makes things clear for the working group but is going to cause confusion when the document gets to people that haven't been on this journey with us, then it's possibly better for us to include, could we say, registry back-end service providers? Again, we want people to focus on the substance of our work and not be worried about definitions. Or as an alternative, if it's used in the guidebook, then perhaps we just indicate that somewhere. But if my concern is if it's causing a question in Jonathan's mind, then I'm sure that same question will be asked by a number of other people looking at the document.
This is Steve. I've gone through the guidebook. I think this does argue for a definition on page 6. Let's pick a term we like, and then the definition will be expansive. It'll include the word back-end and the word third-party service provider. Because the word third-party provider shows up quite frequently in the guidebook.
I think that's a great approach, Steve, to just getting to that clarity.
No objection from me, Jonathan.
Our document.
Okay.
Might be the term we have in there now, which is the word registry service provider.
Yes.
We have in there now. And I guess the definition, Jonathan, you'd like to see at least the words back end and the word third party in that definition.
Yeah, that sounds fine, Steve. It's just to make sure that we cover that. I frankly think service provider is not a bad term, but it's just a matter of making sure it's inclusive and understood as to what to encompass other terms. So, yes, as you suggest, that sounds sensible.
The word word service provider does show up. The guidebook isn't as cut and dried on this as you might imagine, and the word back-end shows up only on two pages.
Rosemary, here it's interesting when you try and start to try measuring things, how these little elements of confusion become much clearer.
Yeah, the word back-end looks like it only shows up with reference to the emergency, but I think I would probably... Jonathan, if I were to use the word back-end, I might actually confuse them, since the guidebook never uses the word back-end except for emergency. And yet you started this discussion by suggesting that most people think of the regular old registry services provider as the back-end. So if I put it in there, I need to clarify that does not mean the back-end...
emergency.
Emergency. Does not mean the emergency back-end.
Yeah, Steve, I'm not sure I can offer something more sensible there. It's really just as long as there is a definition of what we mean by a service provider is probably the best. So it's quite clear to anyone reading the document what the difference between a registry operator is, in other words, someone who operates the entire registry, both in terms of contractual relationship with ICANN and the technical service provision, and that the service provider is essentially responsible for providing the technical services to another company who is the contracted party with ICANN. As long as it comes across clearly in what we mean by that, which we clearly understand, I don't feel strongly that the word back-end, for example, has to be included in there.
So it provides technical services to the capital R registry operator, capital O, who holds the contract with ICANN.
Correct. That's the way I understand it.
Okay. Yeah, so we're certainly, after making these edits, I'll circulate them tonight, but I can tell you we wouldn't want to dump this into translation or have it posted until everybody's had a chance to take a look at these two changes. I'll do it with a red line as well as a final V7. Would this document need to take out version 7 and say, remove any reference to the word version? What's the right way to characterize it? Is it a final draft, initial draft? Need some guidance from staff on this.
Final draft.
And yet, after public comment period is worked in, we would come up with what is then called a...
It'll be the final version of the advice letter. I mean, because this isn't really an issue report, but it'll just be the final version of the advice letter.
Okay, so where I have on the top of every page where it said draft V6, it'll change to the words final draft. And everybody's cool with that, right?
Yes. Rosemary,
okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
I guess we're ready for competition measures, right?
That's right. Yes, they are.
And Steve, this is Barry. I guess for our first four for our accounts where there's a blank field for anticipated difficulties will match the previous ones, none anticipated or whatever language you use.
I think it was none noted. It's a great catch.
Yeah.
I'll put that in. And for Jonathan Robinson's benefit, Jonathan Robinson, do you have visibility of the screen?
Yes, Steve. Thanks. I'm just toggling various windows here, but yes, I do.
The first row... It will say none noted, and the target will read increase of 2x over 2011, and in parens underneath it, it will say 313. And there will be a footnote explaining how staff came up with the numbers. The second one will read none noted, an increase of 10x over 2011, and in parens it will have the number 21, which is the total number of GTLDs. The third row will be none noted, and the increase will be an increase of 2x over 2011. And the quantity there, I believe, would be 7, including ICM. Agreed, Barry?
For the third row registry operators?
Yes. Yeah, XXX makes it 7. And then the next row, none noted. We're fixing the row to say quantity of unique GTLD registry service providers before and after expansion, none noted for difficulty, increase of 2x over 2011 quantity, and in parens the number would be 6. Right, Barry?
Yes, for the service providers. And now that I think about the registry operators, that's going to be...
And it's unique.
Right.
I may wait until I get your revised footnote before I put the numbers in.
Yeah, yes, definitely. I need to run through the numbers. Because we know, VeriSign has 3, ComNet and Name, PIR with 1. So, yeah, let me provide the numbers again before you post them in.
And for the benefit of the community that will read this, if we're not betraying anything confidential, it might be good to indicate that. the operator. Is VeriSign the operator for .name or just the service provider? Who holds the contract for .name?
This is Barry, VeriSign.
Okay.
They bought the .name registry several years ago and also provide the back-end services okay. as well.
In the footnote where we, since it's only seven different names, I'm hoping we can actually list them in the footnote. Is there any objection to that?
Rosemary, here I can't see why they would be.
Great. The next row is the quantity of registrars before and after expansion, along with an indication of country. What about difficulty on that one, Barry?
That one's easy. In the spreadsheet I sent, it has a listing of the counts of registrars by country. So that's easy.
Well done. And so the quantity number, the hash symbol, would be replaced by the number 1,000. And, of course, this would refer to the same footnote. The next one there that says new entrance, I would propose a tiny edit, is that right after the word new entrance, I will put new entrance in quotes and then move the part of the definition to tell people what that means. For the purposes of this measure, new entrants are registry operators that did not operate a legacy GTLD.
Yep. Right. That sounds fine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know we have it in there, but they have to read to the end of the sentence to see all that. And Jonathan Robinson, you see that prices are not targeted. They are simply to be gathered.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I've got that.
Jonathan Robinson, the target for new entrants, you kind of glossed over that. Did you have any reaction to a new entrant target of 20%? We just pulled it out of the air.
No, I think to some extent that's got to be a straw man. I mean, what is a view of competition? I mean, really, this is about putting a figure out there in public comment. I would expect people can either say that's ridiculous, that's nowhere near competition, or that's too strong, that's too much, that's too high a target. I mean, it's very difficult to set what one man's competition might be slightly different to another. I find it difficult to have a reaction to that.
Rosemary here, Jonathan, that's kind of the tenor of the discussion we had when we were grappling with this.
Understood, and I think there's a point where this has to be put out for comment and see what reactions there are to that. And I remember Steve's previous comments on this, as long as it's not ridiculous people will shoot us down for an absurd figure, but it's very difficult to say frankly, it'll be very difficult to get 20%. I would expect. I mean, there's significant challenges to getting people to register in new GTLDs. But let's see how that's responded to.
But again, this just means that of the new registrations at the end of 3 years, and let's suppose there have been 100 million new registrations at the end of 3 years, this would say that 20% of the new registrations in the new GTLDs would be held by zones that are run by quote-unquote new entrants. And we're not even guessing the quantity of new registrations as a percentage of the total. It's simply which of the new ones belong to new entrants. Does that need to be worded differently?
Rosemary, you know, I think we've got that right, Steve. We've got share of new registrations held by new entrants.
this is Barry. So, but to get that percent of new registrations, we have to look at the whole of all registrations.
Yeah.
And so, hypothetically, in the legacy world, let's call it 100 million registrations.
Yeah.
That means we have to have 20 million registrations and new GTLDs by the end of 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty stiff to me.
Rosemary,
would you just repeat that?
So the way I read this, the measure the percent of new GTLD registrations and GTLDs run by registry operators that did not operate a legacy GTLD. So to get the percent of new GTLD registrations, don't we have to consider all registrations that exist out there today?
I disagree. It's just totaling up. You count the zone files. If we have 500 new GTLDs, you would count up the total number of registered domain names, and that's your denominator.
All right. All right.
Numerator is which portion of those 500 new GTLDs were run by a new entrant defined to the left. And A divided by B is equal to, we're saying, should be at least 20%. Now, I'm translating what I was thinking when I wrote this down after we had our call, but if anybody thinks it ought to be something different, this is a great time to clarify.
I almost hate to say it, but the formula you just mentioned in written word would be awesome. Just because my first read of it again and spacing out on what we discussed last week is I immediately think about the universe of registrations and then some number derived of that of the new GTLD registrations.
Rosemary here. So is there any construction of words, Barry, that can clarify it, do you think, or can you suggest? The share of the new GTLD registration.
Yeah, every time I read it, it seems clear.
Yes. Rosemary here, I suggest we leave it, and we'll just have to see what we get back in public comment. So why don't we press on then, or are we 11? Yep.
I believe that takes us to the end.
All
please
right,
go to the appendix, though, so you can cover the legal note.
Yeah. We need to
Barry sent this over to me from ICANN Legal. I added the first paragraph and the final note in italics. Please give it a look.
Rosemary here, I thought that was fine, Steve. I think it's important that we include the legal advice so that people are aware of the particular issue, but the statement or the note at the end I thought was fine.
Even though that our statement effectively negates any importance to the legal note. Rosemary, I might add.
I don't think that's right. I think the legal note is very important because it's focusing on key issues around the consideration of competitive markets. What we're saying in the note is that we don't think that anything that we've asked for raises these issues. Other people may think differently about that.
My final paragraph was just meant to imply that ICANN just measuring something is not the same thing as making a recommendation. But if you're okay with the final paragraph, I don't want to create a problem where there is none. Are we good?
Rosemary, you, I think it's fine.
Then I guess we're done with the draft. I could probably turn this around in 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay. Now we have
what's next on the agenda? The PowerPoints?
Rosemary, we have one issue in the chat that's been raised by Carlos. It's a very complicated issue, and I don't think we're going to be able to progress it. But I just wanted everybody to note, Carlos has raised a question, how can we evaluate and avoid the collusion between registries and registrars, which I think is going to the issue of vertical integration. What will be the question to do in this context? Carlos, do you want to give us a bit of background on this issue? As I say, I'm just not sure that it's one we can progress through this particular piece of work.
Thanks, Rosemary. I was thinking about competition prices. I concerned about what would be our point related with collusion, or avoid collusion or antitrust situations. I think we need some measure to evaluate that possibility in the market. Is my opinion. But after that, I read the legal letter in the appendix. It's not only my concern. I saw it's a big concern for another. I don't know what is the question or the measure to do or to prevent in this context to see if the situation occur or not. It's complicated to explain to me, but I think you are understanding.
Yes, Rosemary here. It's a very complicated issue, and you're right. We need to be cautious given the legal advice. I think what we're doing, Carlos, is laying the foundations with the number of measures and the kind of metrics that we have in place. And if we don't see developments in terms of the number of operators in the market, then down the track, there may be some material that people could use to think about this issue. But having watched competition regulators, even in places like Australia, try to wrestle with collusion, the evidentiary base that you need takes years and years to develop. So I think at the moment we can just appreciate the concern, but it's not something we can pick up in this particular piece of work. Are there any other views on that? And while people are mulling that over, I'm sorry to do this, but Barry, would you mind getting someone to call me because my battery's about to run out? I'll put the number in the chat. So I think we're done with the document now. It can go after the changes out for publication, and we're looking at the slide pack. I'm going to have to disappear and wait for the call. Thank you.
We're going to call Rosemary now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Gisela. Okay, this is Barry. I have the first draft of the consumer metrics presentation posted in the Adobe Connect window. Essentially, I pretty much lifted some of the main slides that was used in Dakar, with exception of updating the definitions and metrics portions of it. Probably one thing to note as we just as we go through this, that given the quantity of metrics that we have, it would have meant 20 extra slides. So something for the working group to consider is I'll be happy to bring those into the PowerPoint if we wish to only present from PowerPoint, or if maybe it'll be better to move over directly to the advice letter instead of just trying to bring in the highlights. So with that in mind, I'll just run through each of the slides quickly, and we can move on from there.
Seven are pretty much identical to what we showed in Dakar. They just have the cool Jurassic Park logo.
Yes, that's very true. I wasn't, you know, again, I just created this in my own little world. I wasn't really sure how much the working group wanted to rehash some of the same substance or content that was created in Dakar. However, I figure we might have a much bigger and broader audience this time around, so we'd want to bring those that weren't familiar with the topic up to speed. So that's why I went ahead and included them in here. And this is also just to confirm, while the final schedule is not out yet, it still looks like we have our 11 to 12:30 slot. So that's just before lunch and doesn't compete with the GNSO. One small risk is there might be an RPM session that overlaps with ours, so we might be competing for that topic, but none of that is final just yet.
Barry, this is Steve. The first slide, that's the first time I've seen the CCTC abbreviation. It shows up again a few times, but CCTC doesn't even match the words in our working group label. Is there a reason we picked it that way?
Yes and no. There was a change. These shorthand uses they're generated internally to ICANN for us tracking the various projects. And several months ago, there was never ever really a use consistently. It was either CCI or CCCI, and you'll notice in our email listing, it's CCI-DT. This use of CCTC is the most recent version that's being used on the pending projects list and everything else within the GNSO. So my intent here was to just make sure we're using the latest and greatest.
But where did it come from? Because it doesn't fit the words. Was it just jumbling the words choice and trust? I can't figure that out.
I quite honestly can't answer that. That's how it showed up on the pending projects list, and that was the designation given, so I've just been using that. If preferable, we can just remove it altogether. I don't think that it really adds any value to everybody just calls this the Consumer Metrics Working Group anyway.
Then I propose dropping the acronym for the most acronym-happy group on the planet. Let's see if we can defy convention.
All right, I will do that.
Oh,
Okay, so slide one, basically the goals for today's workshop: provide an update since Dakar, review the draft advice letter, and then allow the community to participate and discuss the topic. Any other thoughts about other goals that we'd want to accomplish during our 1.5-hour session?
Just to clarify, Barry, we would be in the middle of, I guess, towards the second half of our public comment period on this, right?
Correct.
No, I think you got it right. That's about the appropriate discussion.
Okay, slide three. This is just, again, taken from the Dakar slide, and which highlights the affirmation of commitments section that pertains to what we're trying to accomplish here.
Could I ask you to put the third paragraph, the third bullet, put it in red or something so that people will focus on that? I like putting all the commitments in there in context, but it's great to show them the one from which we got our phrases.
Hi, everybody.
Over to you.
Thanks, Steve. Sorry about all that. I have no idea what happened. But anyway, I'm back now. We're just, I guess, working our way through slide by slide.
Correct, Rosemary. I'll bring you up to speed. Basically, most of the contents of this presentation were lifted from the Dakar presentation. Creating this in isolation at this point, I'm anticipating that our audience will be greater than what we had and more broad than what we had in Dakar. So just to help bring up persons that may not be familiar with the topic as others, kind of quickly go through why we're here and those kinds of aspects before we get into the true details of the advice letter and the metrics.
I think grounding this presentation in that background is very important.
It's very good. The two changes we've made so far was just one, dropping the acronym CCTC. I won't rehash it, but it was confusing, so we'll remove reference to that. The goals for today's workshop seemed appropriate so far by the working group. And then the affirmation of commitments, Steve just wanted me to highlight the third bullet in red, which I just changed on the master.
Yep.
And moving on to slide four. And Steve, would you like this in red instead of blue, just so that it pops a little bit more as well?
I think so. And now I see where you got CCTC.
Right. Well, but then wouldn't it be two C's after the T? It'd be CCTC.
N and S. No, never mind.
Let's go C squared T C squared.
Don't go there.
Okay. Moving on to slide five, just the board resolution. That doesn't have any CPCCC in it.
No, in fact, there is, Rosemary, that's where the confusion came from, because the kind of header for the board resolution was competition, choice, and innovation. So that's where we got CCI from. So
right.
The fewer of these CCs we have, the better, I think.
And then the funny thing was, it was still missing a C. And then to make it even more confusing is, the group started off as a drafting team putting the charter, and then the charter states that it's a working group. And it's really not really quite clear whether this is really just a drafting team or if it really is a working group, but I digress.
Rosemary here. But the most delicious thing about this group, Barry, is we just got on with the work.
Absolutely.
Here, here.
Okay, moving on to slide six. Again, this was changed over or copied over from the Dakar session. What I did change was the order, consumer, consumer trust, choice, and competition versus what we had in Dakar.
Barry, this is Steve. And Rosemary, if I might, I would recommend instead of establishing, let's say drafting, focus on drafting.
Yeah, that's a good change.
And instead of the word targets, could we put three-year targets?
Uh-huh. Oh.
Thank you.
Okay, those are done.
Great.
And what's funny about our Jurassic Park logo is the bird really gets into the way of some of our content. But
I saw that.
You've got to learn to work with birds, Barry.
And we need to be a little more precise to name what kind
parrot.
Of bird it is. Is it just a parakeet or a parrot? Yeah.
I don't know, Cheryl, you're a resident expert. What is that?
Might be a bird of national significance. A macaw, Cheryl.
A macaw. Excellent. Okay, working group purpose. This was directly lifted from the Dakar presentation.
I think this is perfect. We need it.
Moving on to slide eight, efforts.
Go back to that slide seven, Rosemary here. I'm wondering whether we should pick up, I know we've got that provide the specifics that what we're doing is preparing draft advice to go to SOs and ACs. Again, I'm just worried that someone will think we're going straight to ICANN management with a whole range of stuff.
Great point.
So this is Barry. So,
Barry, Rosemary, I think if we just go back to the charter and lift the words out of the charter.
Yeah, I don't have that in front of me right now,
might even just be the title of the document. Draft advice would be shared only with the ACs and SOs for their consideration. Good consideration before, to provide advice to the board. So we'll have to think about how to word that to keep it brief.
Well, it might, Rosemary here, it might be just worth not worrying so much about keeping it brief, Barry, but to just be very clear that we're providing advice to ACs and SOs for their consideration. Their task then is to provide advice to the board, and the board's task is to consider that prior to convening the review team. And I think the last dot point, the second dot point rather, needs to be included as well, that our work is not intended to limit the scope of the future team's work in any way. That's very important.
Okay, I will make that change post-call, but I'll definitely be sure to call it out so that when I send out the next version to gain working group approval that I got it right.
Thanks, Barry.
Okay, slide eight. I've already changed the title and removed the CCTC just to the Consumer Metrics Working Group. This one was newly created and wasn't lifted from the Dakar, obviously. So I tried to be as concise as possible that, we gained consensus on the proposed definitions, gained consensus on the proposed metrics for each of the definitions.
Barry, we should then go to the targets, suggested targets for the definitions.
Very good.
Yes. Is there a way to qualify that for some for some of them the targets were, what did Jonathan Robinson call them, right?
Aspirational?
Yeah, or just suggested or an effort to start the discussion. I guess we'll say that verbally when we give the presentation.
Straw man, I think he called them.
Yeah. Probably could just qualify it verbally when we give the presentation. Okay.
Rosemary, I was just tracking through what the working group was asked to do, which is the definitions. I think it says measures and targets.
Right, you are.
Okay. Rosemary, again, I wonder in the last dot point whether we should be clear that we have asked for translations of our draft, and the implication of that, of course, is that the response window is going to be open past the 23rd of April now.
Perhaps I just used the month and not the specific date.
But I
mind that by the week of March the 13th, I imagine, well, will there be any other translations already published by then?
Possibly, but I really don't know what the schedule will look like yet. But we do have up until the meeting to finalize this presentation, and certainly we'll know more 2 weeks from now when we meet again on the 6th.
Rosemary, Barry, even if we just had another dot point, which says translations into languages other than English in progress, just something to indicate to people that what we have pushed out now is not the only opportunity for comment.
We have added that.
Thanks.
We'll undoubtedly get a question that will say that with the ALAC or with the GNSO, once they've considered the final advice, would they put their advice up for public comment before forwarding to the board? And I have no idea, but is that something we know going in?
Rosemary, I don't know, Steve.
It would be up to
Cheryl, my recollection of my time on GNSO is that documents went out for public comment, and then the council had a discussion based on the feedback, and then put advice forward to the board from that point.
Okay.
Cheryl, here, the
implication then is that this comment period pretty much is the comment period on advice. Of course, after
Cheryl?
The board makes a decision on these definitions and measures, they would probably post them for public comment at that point. But that would be the board doing so.
Yeah.
Steve, Cheryl here, that's correct. And in fact, from an ALAC perspective, we would probably, and I'm not sure if and when Olivier has put it into his agendas for the ALAC meetings, but it's perfectly possible for it to be discussed and dealt with in the face-to-face meeting during Costa Rica as a piece of ALAC advice, because there's only 15 people who need to deal with that, the ALAC.
Okay. Thanks, Barry.
Okay. The next slide, slide 9, proposed definitions. I think we're all familiar with those.
Could I just suggest as a matter of presentation that we don't try to squash these onto one slide and we put two on one slide and then two on the other? It's just much easier for people who are trying to read and engage in this conversation if we make it really as easy as possible for them to see those definitions.
Okay. Perhaps maybe in line with what we've tried to do in the advice letter, maybe I go ahead and create individual slides for each three of them and include consumer with each one of them.
Or at least with the first two. It doesn't need to be on competition. And then you end up with three slides, one that has consumer and consumer trust, one that has consumer and consumer choice, and one that has competition. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Rosemary, I think that's good. Yeah.
Okay. Let me take a quick note of that. Okay, that will show up in the next version. Moving on to slide 10. Now, this slide, as crowded as it is, which I know it will want to change, warrants whether we want to move over to review just the advice letter or try to bring in the actual metrics. The bullet points that you see here are lifted from the Dakar presentation and at a high level still coincide with the detailed metrics that we have now. What the challenge will be is getting the quantity of metrics that we've defined into slides, which I'll go either way per the working group's direction. I think to make it legible for presentation at our meeting, it would probably be like 10 or 15 slides of metrics, which we can easily do. So whatever the working group would like to do.
Rosemary here, it's a question to me of whether we want to spend the time in that session talking through each of the metrics, or in the alternative, we present in this kind of way, but perhaps on three separate slides, consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition, the range of metrics we're proposing, and rely on anyone who has a particular focus on a particular metric to raise that in the public discussion, rather than going through them one by one by one, to let people bring forward the ones that they want to focus on. My thought would be to include them the way you have, Barry, but using three slides and rely on people to raise the ones they want. But I'm really interested in what others prefer, particularly the other who will be doing this presentation. Over to you, Steve.
Thanks, Rosemary. This is the second to last slide. So this is really the meat of it. Everything else has been context so far. What's the amount of time for the meeting, the presentation?
90 minutes.
The first nine slides, after you get rid of the title, that's at eight slides with no more than 2 minutes each. So we'd be 15 minutes into 90 minutes by the time we got here.
Yeah.
I feel like a glutton for punishment, but if we put the table onto slides, there'd probably be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, approximately 10 to 12 slides with four table rows each. Pretty much what Barry just said. And that would be a font size similar to what you see on this font size here, would be my guess. Barry, we'd have to mock up a few to see how that would work. So if you really have 90 minutes and you've only 15 minutes into it, I think 60 minutes, 70 minutes, potentially to cover 12 slides, is 5 minutes a slide. 6 minutes a slide. Mm-hmm. 6 minutes a slide with four rows on it, that's doable. It's probably unbearable for the audience, but what else would we do for 90 minutes? I'm willing to do it. I want to make sure you guys all think it'll be an effective way to conduct the dialogue.
Rosemary, just in response to that, if you're going to do that, I still think it should be after what I would call the plain English version of the metrics, which is what Barry's got on this slide. I would break that into three different slides. I think it's very important to take people on the journey into the detail and give them a marker so that if they feel they're getting completely lost in the tables on subsequently, they can just go back to this helicopter picture, if you like, just to remind themselves, Steve, what we're doing. By the time you get into, you know, percentage change in GTLDs before and after this and that,
you can get lost, particularly when you're coming to this presentation after, you know, maybe 2 or 3 or 4 days of discussion. So perhaps even though it's going to now look like a very weighty slide pack, we have the, what I will call the helicopter version on page in 10 of our slide pack, and then the table version to assist the discussion during the 90 minutes.
This is Steve. I would agree with that. So slide 10 becomes 3 slides, one for each trust, choice, and competition.
Mm-hmm.
We probably, Barry, want to revisit the Dakar shorthand,
which is
make sure that it's tracked. You did already. Thank you.
So actually, how about this? Since we're going to break apart our definitions into 3 slides, would it maybe make sense to review the definition and then the helicopter version of the metrics for each? So consumer trust, definition, consumer trust, helicopter metrics, same for choice, same for competition, and then I'll append all the detailed metrics after those 6, and we can get into the details as we see fit. Because one thing you didn't consider, Steve, is maybe like 15 minutes for questions, or if we have dialogue back and forth during the presentation, that'll definitely increase our time.
You know, it's true. With the detailed slides up there, it wouldn't be appropriate to read them. It wouldn't. It's really having them so that questions could come up from the audience and we would quickly advance to the slide with the metrics that are closest to what the questioner is asking about and maybe walk them through how we did what we did.
Yes.
And Barry, with respect to the, you were suggesting maybe you do the definition of, say, consumer trust, and then you do the high-level description, and then the definition of choice, and then the high-level description. But I would argue that the 3 definitions would probably do them relatively quickly so that the audience can see that the way we've made a distinction between competition and choice. And by spacing those 2 slides very, very far apart, harder for people to understand what we mean. Is it your idea that they would only be 2 slides apart? You'd have a definition and then high-level bullets on choice, and then the definition and then high-level bullets on competition?
Correct. So then 2 slides for each, but I can go either way.
Pairs. I think you're fine. Do 3 pairs. I think that's a great idea.
Rosemary here. Let's just see how that works in the next version of the pack, because remember, it took us quite a while to get agreement on the definitions. That's hard conceptual policy work. So the point that you've just made, Steve, I think is really important, that, you know, you do have to look at those definitions as a group to get the full sense of what's being proposed in each one individually. But let's proceed the way you've suggested and just have another look at our next review session.
Definitely easy to reorganize slides.
Yeah.
Okay, then basically closing out is just our next steps on slide 11. Basically, draft advice measures are in the public comment period. What I meant to say is the public comment period, not the forum. And that we'll basically take all the comments received. I'll get rid of the CCTC and look to incorporate into the final advice letter. And then sometime in May, we plan to submit the final advice letter to the GNSO Council.
Thank you. Rosemary and Steve, a question for you. If I make the edit to the advice draft and circulate those tonight, how long do you want for this group to give a final sign-off before we turn it over to staff for posting?
Look, I would like to do it really as quickly as possible. So you're all Tuesday night, I'm Wednesday morning. If it comes out, how would people feeling it around in 24 hours? I think I might take silence to mean acclamation in this regard. Yep. So
So that's a real quick turnaround. Yep.
And they're not substantive changes. They're relatively small.
No.
I could mess up the definitions, and Barry and I might get the footnote a little sideways, so it would be great to have you guys give it one more look.
Yep, sure. And Cheryl, Rosemary here, I've got a question for you. Do you want to include anything particular about ALAC? We've got our final advice letter going back to GNSO Council, and that's right. But do we want to mention ALAC in any way in this next steps area?
Look, my guess is yes, but without... I would prefer you to pop off a quick email to Olivier to ask the exact words he'd like there.
Okay, that's good. I just
really was... quite possible that he may be thinking to have this something that is dealt with during the agenda for the face-to-face meetings, and that would be a nice thing to be able to say. And ALAC is planning on signing off, you know, tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay, great. All right. So, Barry, I will do that. I'll get in touch with Olivier and just get him to have a look at slide 11 and see what if anything, he would like to incorporate there.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is the trickiest slide, eh? You want to say what a thank you or what a headache it's been or we want to get on with the rest of our lives now. And then the questions, Of course, Rosemary here, Steve, you'll be taking questions through the presentation, so it's kind of final questions, I think, here at this point, isn't it?
I would assume that the rest of the group believes it's better to take questions as we go. And of course, all members of the working group who are present should be up front as well, right?
Yeah, terrific.
Happy for that, but I think if we just have a strong and well-known voice for the advocacy of proper definitions driving it, it would be quite useful, Steve.
And failing the finding of such a person, I would be stepping into that.
Oh, come off it.
Excellent news. Okay, now we've got, I think, a minute to go, so we are getting really good on the timing on these calls. Is there any other issue that anybody would like to raise before we sign out today? And, of course, we're coming back in 2 weeks' time. Have I got that right? Yeah.
Correct.
The week before Costa Rica. So any final comments from anybody? Being none, I think we just say great big thanks to everybody for another great call, terrific contributions, and well done, Barry, for all your work in pulling the slides together, and to you in particular, Steve, for work on the draft advice letter.
Big hear on that from me. You guys have been amazing.
Yeah.
Barry, I'm just wondering if you would mind unofficially, note that, unofficially, saying to, when you have an opportunity to cross paths with Adrian Kindris, that Cheryl happened to mention some fascinating market share metrics that Oz Registry International had presented the CCTLD AEDA board, and that whilst she didn't give you any information on what they contained, she thought when and if they were going to be able to be made public, it might have relevance to our work.
Can I record it and just play it back?
You can. You can actually give him that specific soundbite. Because he would appreciate that from me, because he hasn't actually sent the board the presentation, and so I'm unsure about its public ability.
Okay.
But it's the sort of thing that if it's being done in other spaces, it could be extremely useful stuff to have dragged in early on in this process.
I will pass along the message.
Okay. And besides, Adrian's used to me interfering. And the other thing is, Steve, I expect your feedback from not only the YouTube link I've given you, but you should do a search of the talking macaws. So I think it's called Rio and somebody, and they have an extensive vocabulary, and we can compare notes later.
Rosemary here, Cheryl. I thought you were going to ask Steve to practice and perform.
Oh, dear. Okay. No, I want him to be a parrot expert while he's doing it.
All right, everybody. I'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Thank you all. Bye. Take care.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
At this time, I'll conclude today's conference. You may disconnect. Thank you for your attendance.